Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, August 25th. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson, taking a look at markets from Wall Street to the wheat fields and the soybean fields and the corn fields of the Midwest. In addition to that, though, this week, we were dealing with a hurricane impacting possibly oil production. And then we were also dealing with Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Jackson Hole, Wyoming, a great vacation spot, but it gets some international notoriety once a year when the financial advisors of the world gather in Jackson Hole to take a look at financial activity and the market activity. So far today, though, not much happening at Jackson Hole. We might take a look at that to begin our report today, because the Fed chief, Janet Yellen, didn't say much of anything on monetary policy in a much-anticipated speech. Interest rate-sensitive sectors such as telecommunications up 0.8%, utilities up 0.3%, as Yellen's speech did not comment on the path of interest rate hikes for the central bank, and that sent U.S. Treasury yields lower. In addition to her speech at the annual meeting of central bankers in Jackson, Wyoming, there was focus on financial stability, but giving no hint on monetary policy, leaving the prospect of more interest rate hikes up in the air. And then along with her appearance, a speech by European Central Bank Chief Mario Draghi also gave little guidance on tapering the bank's bond holdings and heralded globalization over protectionism. One trader said, if anything, both with Draghi and Yellen, the big fear from investors was a more hawkish stance on monetary policy. Those fears were overblown. You didn't have that hawkish surprise. The euro rose to its highest in more than 2 years after Draghi's comments. And so let's take the numbers as we ended this trading week on Wall Street. For the day today, the Dow Industrial Average up 30 points. It ended the week at 21,813. The S&P 500 index ended 4 points higher at 2443, and the NASDAQ composite ended lower, down 5 points, 62.65, and VIX at the CBOE, that's the volatility index, down nearly a point, ending the week at 11.28. And the change for the week on Wall Street? Well, the Dow went up 0.2%. The S&P 500 up 0.75%. And the NASDAQ went up also 0.75%. So we ended the week higher on Wall Street, but no dramatic news other than the hurricane, and things quieted down a little bit on the concerns over possible outbreaks of tension in various countries around the world. But let's look at the oil price situation. Based on the worst storm, or the biggest storm, to hit the U.S. coast in 12 years, oil prices went up nearly 1% as the dollar fell and the Gulf Coast braced for Hurricane Harvey. The dollar, which oil is priced, fell after Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen made no reference to U.S. monetary policy. And then Harvey strengthened into a powerful Category 3 storm, last located about 75 miles east-southeast of Corpus Christi, Texas, in the Gulf of Mexico, packing top sustained winds of 120 miles per hour. So refineries, terminals, onshore and offshore production operations, and other infrastructure have shut or have begun storm preparations, with Harvey is set to make landfall over the weekend. And some tracking models show the storm could circle back out over Gulf waters after making landfall and then take aim at Houston at about midweek. So that storm isn't done with its moving around just yet. And where it does go and where it does come ashore will be, of course, of interest not only to the oil industry, but also to the agricultural community in the United States. Because very typically, storms that come onshore in the Gulf Coast suddenly end up going up the Mississippi River, bringing moisture into the Midwest corn soybean growing region. And so that possibility also has to be considered as we watch the progress of this storm. And it would have an impact on agriculture in a big way if it were to make its way up to Illinois. Because next week, Monday or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. And thus far, weather forecasts looking pretty good for that big show. But Hurricane Harvey could change all of that. So as we look ahead to next week, there'll be a ton of data providing maybe fresh clues on the health of the economy as the third quarter progresses. Tuesday, the U.S. Conference Board expected a report that its Consumer Confidence Index slipped to 120.8 in August from a reading of 121.1 in July. Another survey on Tuesday, they think, will show the S&P Case-Shiller House Price Index increasing 5.7% year-on-year in June after a similar gain in May. Wednesday, the Commerce Department expected to revise second quarter gross domestic product growth by a tenth of a percentage point to an annualized rate of 2.7%. And the Commerce Department expected to report on Thursday that consumer spending increased 0.4% in July. The Labor Department closely watched employment report on Friday. Well, they think it'll show non-farm payrolls increased by 180,000 jobs in August after climbing 209,000 jobs in July, and the unemployment rate forecast to remain unchanged at 4.3%. Average hourly earnings also seen gaining 0.2% after going up 0.3% in July. So, now that we've looked at all the data, let's look at some of the reports earnings-wise that'll be coming out. Dollar General Corporation releases its earnings for the third quarter on Thursday. The discount store retailer has been spending more on higher wages and training for store managers. The Campbell Soup Company will report fourth quarter results. That's one of the reports that a lot of Wall Street watches every quarter because somehow they can relate that to consumer spending. But the world's largest soup maker has been facing constrained capacity of its protein shakes manufacturing facility and also weak demand for its soups in a can and V8 vegetable juices as consumers shift to fresh and organic alternatives from packaged foods. Best Buy likely to post an increase in profit in the second quarter on Tuesday. It's been focusing on its growth geographically and by product offering. The number one U.S. electronics retailer has benefited as an improving job market has spurred homeowners to spend more, particularly on appliances and home theaters. And then on Friday, the second round of the North American Free Trade Agreement talks involving the U.S., Mexico, and Canada will open in Mexico City as the three countries push to complete a full modernization of the 23-year-old agreement ahead of Mexico's presidential election campaign early next year. So there'll be plenty to watch and to look for market reaction as we face the week ahead. Of course, as we said, the granddaddy of all of the outdoor farm equipment shows with new equipment and new technology will focus a lot of the agricultural community on Decatur, Illinois next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the Farm Progress Show. So we're going to talk markets. They're still talking about that August crop report and some of the numbers like the corn number. And I think you'll find Max's guest with some interesting ideas on that coming up when we continue with the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Clayton Pope Commodities, Champaign, Illinois, joining us in the studio. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Max. Good to be here.
You didn't get out on a crop tour this week. You didn't go out and wander into the fields and get together at night and compare numbers and say, yeah, well, it's not out there. Or
I didn't personally get involved in a crop tour, but sure been reading an awful lot of them. I did speak to a co-op group yesterday, and they had just completed their tour down in the Champaign area. And they were down about 15% from a year ago in their corn. And a lot of variability, not as much variability as you see across the country, you know, from some of these other national tours going on. But that was really the way it started out. That wasn't really all that bad, I guess I'd have to say, being 15% off a year ago.
A lot of people are saying variability. That's the thing you hear, even within a small geography, I guess.
Yeah, that's what makes this year so tough. You just can't generalize at all, and it's kind of completely flipped. I mean, you know, early in the season, it seemed like the Western Belt was great. It was looking really good, and the Eastern Belt was getting pounded. Now it's flipped. The Eastern could use some water, and the Western's getting too much at night sometimes.
Not many days into September, we'll get another USDA estimate. Historically, how do those numbers compare in September with August? Do they change them much?
You know, they usually don't. I mean, there's always exceptions, of course. But to, you know, some of these people out there are insisting that you know, this corn yield is overstated by 5 bushels or more. That would be really unusual historically to see that kind of a drop. I mean, let's face it, the USDA has some pretty extensive sampling procedures that they follow. And to do a complete about-face like that, I mean, it could happen. It's happened a few times in the past, but it's really rare to see a big change in corn. And I think beans, it's even less likely to see a big change there. If anything, I would have to think the bean yield has held steady or probably improved a little bit.
We have seen some private estimates since that report actually raising the numbers, raising the corn yield, raising the soybean yield on the basis of recent precipitation. Are you in that camp?
I am in that camp. A lot of the stuff that I subscribe to and people I work with in the business, a couple in particular have really been pretty vocal that the yields are above what the chatter was before that August report. They've got some really good track records. And accordingly, I guess I never really bought into, you know, the sub-160 type number, even 163 or something like that. I'll admit I was surprised that USDA came out as high as they did, but you know, some of these private estimates I follow weren't surprised at all.
I guess I was a little bit surprised that a corn number might be climbing here, continuing to climb, given this late in the corn growing season, that some people would be adding to their estimates just in the past week on the basis of precipitation. I figured we pretty much had the corn yield.
Well, you'd think so, but every year surprises me how, you know, there's this perception in the trade, I think, that after pollination, you know, say July 10th, the corn crop is what it is, and that's just simply not true. And it's even less true this year, I think, because you know, some of these guys shoot in East Central Illinois. Those poor guys, I know of a few guys that planted their crop 4 times. They replanted 3 times, which is crazy. And obviously each one of those is going to push the maturity back a little bit. So I think this year more than ever, you can build a case for late impact on yields.
Pushing the maturity back, how much will we have in jeopardy? Well, you know, it's felt like fall these past few mornings, doggone it. And what if we get a cold snap here? What if we get a frosty morning?
Yeah. Oh, boy, I tell you, it's kind of wishing on a star, I think, there. I mean, it seems like every year they, you know, they raise that possibility, and obviously anything can happen. But
the reality is, over the past 40 years, it hasn't happened much.
Really, not to any significant event. And when you look at just the sheer magnitude of our carryover, it makes it even less of an issue, if you ask me. Because let's say it does, you know, we do get some crops nipped here by a frost. You know, if you're looking at the 2.3 billion bushel carryover, and like you said, possibly that's growing, it's kind of like, so what if we lose? I mean, it'd be really hard to lose 300 million bushels, I think. So to get that below 2 billion would take a gargantuan frost event, I think, and I sure wouldn't bet on it.
Bottom line, near term, there's really nothing that's going to improve this situation dramatically, you feel?
The price situation?
Yes,
well,
sir.
I'm surprised at the lack of risk premium, the way the corn has fallen in the last couple of weeks. I mean, beans have rallied, 25 cents from the recent lows, something like that.
That was a 90-cent drop, wasn't it?
That's right. So in a sense, maybe it's just kind of your basic dead cat bounce. We'll see. But the corn, I'm not real hopeful for much of a rebound here. I think, you know, we could see 15, 20 cents or something like that, but myself and the rest of the world would be all over that, I think. You just got too many bushels unsold that people have their sights set on that market, and rallies are going to be sold. It's going to make it even harder to get much follow-through to the upside, in my opinion.
Going to make it a long winter, isn't it?
I'm afraid it is, yeah. I mean, you look at some of these preliminary acreage numbers being talked about in South America, and, you know, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, you know, as soon as we get our crop put away, then we're going to be watching weather down there.
They are going to come down on their corn and bean acreage, are they not?
Well, slightly.
I have a different opinion.
Oh, yeah,
really?
I thought Solaris came out a couple of days ago, and they were talking about just a very slight decrease. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people out there that say, you know, wait till the planting is, you know, underway, and then we'll see. I just heard a fellow speak yesterday that was talking about Brazil adds about 600,000 new acres of ag production every year, and how that's broken down. I mean, there's obviously a lot of crops besides corn and soybeans, but clearly those are two of the biggest. The point is that it's not going to go down significantly, and it has a very good chance of inching up a little bit more, if you ask me.
Let's come back to the corn estimate again, mm-hmm. if I may.
You bet.
And you mentioned the fact that farmers replanted and replanted and replanted in some instances. Some folks never, ever got a good stand. And it wasn't just a matter of acreage abandonment, but in the stand that they accepted, that they kept, there were a lot of holes in parts of the eastern Corn Belt. Northern Illinois, one of those places. Not just a late crop, but a fragmented partial crop, simply because as you flew over it at a low altitude, you could see it actually out there with mm-hmm. all those spots, and, of course, visible from the farmers' drones. And what will happen at harvest time as they go out through those fields in the combine? I guess my question is, did USDA really get a good grasp on that? And let me come back to the methodology of USDA in that August report. Did they not, I heard something about this, did they not more heavily weight farmer opinion in that survey in August?
I didn't know it was a departure from the normal procedure. I thought it was pretty much 50-50. You know, they do the polling of the farmers, and then they also, of course, do their own pretty extensive field testing. But I thought they surveyed something like 22,000 farmers, and I thought it was – I wasn't aware of a change in the weight of it, but I did find out something this year that I wasn't aware of before, that farmers have the farm input – they typically underestimate their crop, and there is a factor in there where they kind of extrapolate upwards to account for that.
Maybe that's right.
I'm sorry, upwards on the yield to account for that bias. And I thought that was interesting. Frankly, I wasn't aware that they did that. And it probably does make sense. I mean, if history shows that they typically underestimate it.
I guess that's what I was reading, yeah, because I've heard other farmers say the same thing, that they probably were – had a tendency to underestimate that yield.
Mm-hmm. Which raises an interesting thing, Max. I think I've found this year more than most, people have sort of a everybody else-itis in terms of, you know, some of the people who were hurt early and they got pretty, bulled up over the thing, understandably, you know, when you look at your own crop and it's suffering. But so many of those people, it's improved, but there's still this mindset with a lot of people, everybody else hasn't improved as much as I have. And so what I'm saying is, like you say, well, how's your crop? Well, it's really not that bad, but I've heard, you know, so-and-so, you know, a few miles away or a few states away or whatever is really bad. You know, this yield isn't there. And yet there aren't that many people this year that are really looking at a disaster. I mean, obviously there's some exceptions, those poor folks in the Dakotas and actually part of Kansas really got hurt hard. You know, Iowa is so variable. But, you know, add it all together and you know, it seems like in most years where you do get some significant strength in the markets because of yield problems, you can look at a lot of areas that are really critically hurt. And this year it just seems like an awful lot of the bigger production areas like Illinois, it's certainly not what last year was. It's certainly off the top. But, you know, in general, I kind of sum it up as, yeah, it's not all that bad. And that's significant, I think, very significant. I mean, let's remember that people talk about how this yield can't be that high. I mean, what are we, 5 bushels off a year ago? You know, so on a national basis, that's a lot of a big drop in yield.
This phenomenon of seeing, well, maybe somebody else has a worse crop than I have. Looking out there, you know, we're hearing about this crop. Is that exacerbated by the social media?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm kind of become a Twitter addict, I'm embarrassed to say, because it's interesting. You get some great information off that, but holy cow, it can be such a time waster. Not only so many tweets are completely off subject, but no doubt the squeaky gear gets the grease, and I think problems are magnified.
I tell growers to have a shadow account and follow a very select few, people whose guidance you trust, individual economists or market analysts, and watch those closely. But, you know, the other stuff, a lot of this stuff is akin to going into the coffee shop and listening to the...
Well, you're right. And it's overwhelming.
Bad news boys,
you need, you do need to cut some people out because, I mean, good grief, you get up in the morning sometimes and you've got like 489 tweets that you have to catch up on. It's like, come on, I got more important stuff to do here.
If you weren't depressed already, you would be sometimes.
Well, sometimes.
By watching
Twitter. Right.
Clayton, thanks for coming in. We appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Clayton Pope Commodities.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we look at the up and down of the cattle market, we may start next week with a little friendlier market because the cattle placements in feedlots smaller than expected. Let's look at the numbers. Ranchers in July placed 2.7% more cattle in feedlots than a year ago. That fell short of the average estimate by analysts. Dwindling profits for feed yards after being paid less for their cattle amount by packers discouraged them from buying calves for feeding on their way to beef processors. And analysts said fewer cattle are now winding up in commercial feeding pens after ranchers rushed them to market earlier than they had planned to avoid lower prices expected in the coming months amid increased supplies. Cattle that entered feedlots in July could begin arriving at packing plants in early 2018. So what were the numbers? The USDA Cattle on Feed report, issued monthly, showed July placements at 1,615,000 head. That's up from 1,572,000 a year earlier. But it was the largest July placement figure since 2013, when we placed 1,684,000 on feed. The feedlot cattle supply, according to USDA, 10,604,000. That's up 4 1/3% from a year ago, and a little bit below the analyst's average estimate of 4.7%. USDA said the number of cattle sold to packers or marketings up 4.1% in July from a year ago, up to 1 million a year ago, that was 784,000 head. So that's the story. Texas A&M University economist David Anderson agreed that pulling cattle ahead left fewer animals placed in the feeding pens in July, which historically tends to top June placements. And he said also that some feedlot placements in Corn Belt states went up, partly because of livestock that continued to be displaced by drought in the northern plains. Cattlemen in North Dakota, for example, selling a lot of those herds because of no feed. So what'll happen next week? Well, they say it could be a little bit friendly. Don't think they'll call it bullish, but a little bit friendly to the cattle market when it starts the week. One analyst said the cattle on feed report came pretty much in line with expectations, but did lean toward the positive side of the estimates. And so where will we start the trading week on Monday in livestock? The August live cattle contract, after dropping 2 cents today, will start at $105.95 a hundredweight. August feeder cattle will start at $141.37. And the October lean hog contract will start at $63.07 after dropping today 85 cents a hundredweight. Turning to the grain market, corn continuing to fall, sort of like the cattle market in the livestock community, but corn futures fell to contract lows again today. Technical selling and abundant supplies of corn ahead of another bumper U.S. harvest. Although, as you just heard with Max and his guest, Clayton Pope, there's still not total consensus on how much corn we're going to be producing. The Midwest Crop Tour that took place this week projected a record-large soybean crop of 4,331,000,000 bushels. Scouts found smaller soy pod counts in the top three growing states of Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota. And the Crop Tour predicted the U.S. corn harvest at 13,953,000,000 bushels. That could change a great deal from now until we start putting that crop in the bin. So where do we start the week in the grain market? September wheat will start trading Monday at $4.09 a bushel after gaining just half a cent today. December corn will start at $3.53 after dropping 3¼ cents today. November soybeans will start the week at $9.44 a bushel after dropping a penny and a half today. But a lot of attention next week will be found in Decatur, Illinois. More than 600 exhibitors in this year's Farm Progress Show exhibitor plots. And, of course, we'll see some of the normal products, although with some improvements in combines and in tractors. But we're going to see a lot of interest in the unmanned aerial vehicles, the UAVs, and don't call them drones, according to people involved in the industry. But I know it's going to be a big part of the three-day show in Decatur, and there are other private shows also that are doing a great deal of work on drones. And the fact that agribusiness is increasing its use, and one of the areas that agribusiness can use drones is in the crop insurance adjusting. Normally done by foot, walking the fields to determine the yields and so on. Now they're looking at it from the air with drones equipped with all sorts of technical gear that'll tell you if you have an insect, a weed problem, a disease problem, or a drought. We will see you all 3 days at the Farm Progress Show at noon at the ADM tent. And we'll also be talking to the Secretary of Agriculture and a lot of congressmen from ag committees who'll be there trying to see what farmers want in the way of a new farm bill. Well, thank you for joining us again this week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.